Take a walk through Seoul's 500 years of ghastly murders, forbidden history, and hidden scandals. Listen to tales of Korea's deepest, darkest secrets. What lies under the concrete? Or who? The Dark Side of Seoul Ghost Walk at darksideofseoul.com. Book now, if you dare.
And welcome to the Dark Side of Seoul podcast. This is Joe.
This is Sean.
I think my voice is hitting puberty again.
Kraken.
Release the Kraken.
Release the Kraken.
Oh, oh my goodness. I have no beverage to help me. All right. Well, I'm going to have to do this on my own. All right, guys. Here we go.
Good night, everyone.
Have fun with this. I love it.
What are we doing?
I love it that we got a new patron this week. Right after I said, hey, if you want to hear my sordid love life, my depressing love life, get on the Patreon. And then as soon as that episode's released, we get a new patron. I love that. That
was pretty funny. Get on that. I'll buy that for a dollar.
Patreon.com/darksideofseoul. Anyway, today we're continuing our Fall of Joseon series. This is part 9. We're going to wrap up the Imjin War. Yeah. Fun stuff. Fun stuff. It's war. War is not fun. All right. So let's go over what we were talking about before. Hold on. Let me redo my notes because it's in the wrong place. Previously on Fall of Joseon, Japan faced setbacks in its plans to campaign against Ming China as Admiral Yi Sun-shin effectively cut off its supply lines and secured a string of naval victories, notably at Okpo, Dangpo, Danghangpo, Hansan Island, and Angolpo. By the way, anything that ends in po means harbor, so there you go. Despite these victories, Joseon's success was tactical rather than total, as it failed to end the war, but managed to throttle Japanese incursions into China. Resistance from Jola militias and civilians further complicated Japanese efforts. The Ming Emperor responded by sending envoys and troops to aid Joseon, while internal divisions and factional strife plagued Joseon's leadership. Amidst failed peace negotiations and power struggles within Joseon, Hideyoshi, the Japanese leader, shogun, you could say. No, he wasn't shogun, was he?
Well, he was the part of the reunification.
The guy reunified China. Yeah. They called the Hideyoshi invasions. Hideyoshi planned another military campaign, further exacerbating tensions and setting the stage for continued conflict. Additionally, Admiral Yi Sun-shin's clashes with government officials reflected broader issues of political maneuvering and in-group, out-group dynamics within Joseon's leadership. And my specialty is Korean history, not Japanese history, so that's why I get confused on this. And for those of you who are kind of new to our show, or new to the Korean history in general, Joseon is, Korea was called during this time. Until Japanese occupation. Yeah.
When it was called Joseon?
Yeah, it was called Joseon.
Well, it was officially called Joseon until they attempted the empire.
Yeah.
And then that was 1898, I think, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Around that time. So then it became the Han Empire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it wasn't called Korea until the 20th century, really.
Well, the name Korea comes from Goryeo.
So the West kind of put it as Korea on maps.
Yeah, and then Westerners were calling it Korea in the 1880s, the 1890s,
mm-hmm.
in all their writings. Mm-hmm. They call it Korea. Because that's a big part of the thing, like, should it be spelt with a C or with a K?
That's what I meant. Yeah.
So, but I mean, because some people did spell it with a C.
Spanish people.
And the French.
Oh, the ones that call Seoul Seoul. All right, yeah. Seoul.
Well, we call it Seoul. That's also wrong.
I just lost all of our Spanish and French listeners. Okay.
But we also mispronounce it. We say Seoul.
We say Seoul, but it's really Seoul. Seoul.
It's Seoul. It's two. Seoul. It's two. It's two syllables.
It's two syllables. Seoul.
Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway, here's where we start off. So, Japan's second military campaign on Joseon, and a lot of this. Yeah. Okay. Anyways, military campaign on Joseon in 1597. Japan broke off peace talks with Ming and mounted a new military campaign. This campaign consisted of 200 ships and 141,100 soldiers. That's quite a precise number, almost. So early in the year, in January 1597, Japan landed, these troops landed on the southwest coast because they actually controlled it at the time after their first invasion in 1592. The Joseon army was better prepared this time for war and also had Ming support. The Ming emperor had appointed Yang Hao as supreme commander of the 55,000-man army, including a naval force of 21,000? I'm not sure if that's ship. I'm pretty sure that ships are people. Okay. That's a lot. 21. No. It can't be 21,000 ships. It's got to be 21,000 sailors.
It may have been,
or it's, unless it's canoes, junks, or something, you know.
Yeah. I don't know any of those specific numbers, but I would guess too that it wouldn't be 21,000 ships. Maybe as a naval force, it's probably sailors.
It's sailors because how could you? Yeah, you have 55,000 men on the ground and 21,000 ships, so they have to be manned by a certain number of people. That would be like hundreds of thousands of sailors.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so, okay. So that meant people.
Right. It could be a few. It could be like 5,000 to 10,000 ships. That would be a little bit more. That even 10,000 is getting quite high. 5,000.
Not at that time. You didn't really get that high.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. All right, so going to March 1597, Ming first dispatched a 3,500-man advance unit under General Wu Weizhong. The entire Joseon army was put under the command of Ming Supreme Commander Yang Hao. The number of Joseon soldiers was approximately 17,600 in total, which included 12,600 ground forces and 5,000 naval forces. So the Japanese invasion army met strong resistance from the Ming-Joseon combined forces. I'll call them combined forces many times. So that they could not advance northward swiftly as planned. A few months later in June, although the situation was not critical, our good old friend, the bravely King Sonjo. Brave King
bravely
Sonjo.
Ran away.
Orders his officials to work out an evacuation plan.
He bravely ran away.
How many times are you going to abandon your capital and your people?
King Sonjo. And it always surprises me how it's his son that gets all the dirt and shit and from history, not him.
Sonjo's such a kid. Such a sleazebag. Anyway, majority of senior officials were against the evacuation plan, and Ming General Wu Weizhong rebuked the king, saying, "Why should Ming soldiers fight to the death for your country when you are planning to abandon your own country?"
Yeah, exactly.
If the Joseon people had no will to fight against the enemy, there would be no reason for Ming to waste its national resources in defending Joseon.
Yeah, it's just, I'm surprised that he's not a more
reviled
king. Yeah, in history, like, I guess he did good stuff, but I mean, like, his son gets all the dirt, and
which will be in upcoming episodes.
Yeah, and we've spoken about him before as well. We did a whole episode about him already, and his palace.
Yeah.
So, but anyway.
July 1597, Joseon Admiral Wang Gun, we talked about before. He was the one who won out in all the office politics. politics against Yishun Shin. They put in and won out and became the Admiral of the Navy. He led this entire fleet headed for Busan. As soon as he found a large Japanese fleet maneuvering near Goje Island, he attacked the enemy fleet without any adequate preparations.
And just to give some geography to people, Goje is almost dead center in the southern coast of the peninsula.
Yes, I will need to bring some people up to the geography. I don't expect you to know where all these places are. And we are going to name a lot of places.
So far west of Busan.
Yeah, Busan's on the southeast coast.
Yeah.
Southeast.
And Gaje's almost right in the middle.
Yeah.
Little bit east of center.
Yeah.
Beautiful spot.
He had 200 ships. Only a dozen survived. Barely.
Oof.
So it became impossible for them to hold their defense line against the Japanese invaders in the southern provinces. So King Sonjo hastily pardoned Yi Sun-shin and appointed him as the supreme commander in charge of three southern provinces. He keeps getting in and out, in and out, in and out. Left Army Division of the Japanese Army advanced into Jeolla Province and laid siege to Namwon Castle. Jeolla Province is a southwest province. Namwon Castle is in there. A 6,000-man Ming Joseon Coalition Army under the command of Deputy Commander Yang Yuan resisted the Japanese attacks but failed to defend the castle town. Only a dozen soldiers escaped from Namwon. So only a dozen ships, only a dozen soldiers. So the entire Jeolla province fell into the hands of the Japanese army. Japan's right army division advanced northward to seize the capital, Gyeongsong, which, today's Seoul. In early September 1597, the Japanese advance was briefly halted by a unit of combined forces, mostly Ming, at Jiksan, which today is Chonan, in Chungcheong province. Chonan is kind of, today is smack dab in the middle. It's 2 hours south of Seoul.
Yeah, it's a little bit north of the middle.
Yeah.
Close to Gongju, a little bit north of Gongju.
Mm-hmm. Mm. If you know where Gongju is, but Chonan is more well known than Gongju.
Chonan?
Is it Gongju or Gyeongju?
Did you say Chonan?
Chonan.
Oh, I'm thinking Chonan, which is center, but that's not center of the province or center of the of South Korea.
I don't know. No, it is like 2 hours south of Seoul.
Well, Chonan, that I'm...
Hold on, let me pull up my map. I've driven there a few times.
Because if it's Chonan that you're thinking of, or that you're writing there, you can see it on the notes, but that's just close to, not that far from Gongju, which is an ancient capital of Paekje. Beautiful little town.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of mountains, good national parks in that area. Gaedyeongsan, north a bit of Daejeon.
Yeah, it is. I'm right though. It is. It's west. It's a little west. It's a 2 hour drive south of Seoul, directly south of Seoul.
Mm-hmm.
So I was right. All right.
Yeah, Chonan.
I mind that's more central. It's the Chonan Daejeon thing, and Sejong's in the middle. But Sejong's a new city.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, yeah. So Chonan is also where you can see the monument and the shrine for Yu Kwan-sun, the big freedom fighter. That's where her shrine is.
Okay. So, well, they got something. They got stopped 2 hours south of Seoul. if you're driving,
And driving today, not then.
So they failed to stop the advance of a large and strong Japanese army, and they retreated to Suwon. Now we know Suwon is just an hour south of Seoul. That's where Samsung is based. News of the Japanese advance on the capital drove the whole city into a state of chaos. Of course it did. Government officials and citizens were preparing to evacuate. And because the brave central and provincial government officials tendered their resignations, mostly for health reasons.
Of course.
And many of them even left their posts without permission.
Mm.
So the government was nearly paralyzed by officials deserting their duties. So this is great. Because these are people that this is what I call the FUC, fucked up Confucianism. Is people that are in higher positions, they get all the benefits but not the responsibilities.
Yeah.
Of their positions, because when you have a position, it's a social contract.
Mm.
When the shit hits the fan, that's why you get pampered so much, is so that you can be there when your country's in trouble.
Mm.
Yeah. Yep. It still happens today.
Yeah. That's the elites, the young men, the aristocracy, and all that crowd.
Yeah. Okay. So the government was nearly paralyzed because of all this. And some senior officials urged King Sonjo to restore law and order by punishing these guys. But Sonjo, didn't do anything. They also wanted Sonjo to show his determination to defend the capital. I guess they didn't know who Sonjo was.
Yeah, what did he do right at the beginning of the war?
Yeah. Bravely ran away. the wartime state council also issued a decree prohibiting officials from leaving the capital. Of course, no teeth in that. And they slipped out. No problem. Hmm. Sonjo himself ordered the royal secretariat to send young princes down to Haeju over in Hwange province. That's in North Korea today. Since he had no intention to defend the capital, Sonjo even dismissed any suggestion of reinforcing ramparts around the capital to protect it.
Weird, man.
This is repeated by Syngman Rhee right at the start of the Korean War. This is just... Mm. It's a pattern. Also, heavy desertions from the army. Wartime State Council issued orders to behead any deserters. And they worked on plans to recruit soldiers among refugees who had run away from the war torn southern provinces. Almost like how Putin is doing now. but getting prisoners instead of refugees. The Joseon ruling elite were more concerned about their own safety. They were leaving the national defense through the hands of the Ming army, kind of like the Korean War, leaving it to the Chinese and the U.S. to do all their fighting for them. Sonjo said, I know that many senior officials have already evacuated their families from the capital, and some of them have even slipped out of the capital along with their families. So that's even more of a proof that this was happening. September 1597, Sonjo himself wrote a letter to Ming Supreme Commander Yang Hao. In his own handwritten letter, Sonjo asked Yang to deliver his message to the Ming Emperor that he earnestly wanted to abdicate the throne because of his ill health. That's why he didn't punish these other governors, because he was planning on doing the same thing. I'm gonna run away again. I don't even want to be king anymore. Nah.
And it's important to remember that he didn't have an heir at the time either.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not one that was from his queen anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Senior officials and Yang Hao himself persuaded the king not to give up the throne. I think persuade is a very light term to use. He was doing the same excuse that his other officials were doing. So that means the whole Joseon community from top to bottom seemed to have no will to protect their own country. And it was incredible, almost ridiculous that the Ming army was fighting against the Japanese invaders on behalf of the Joseon. A relatively small army of Joseon soldiers, mostly from the Ming Joseon combined forces, joined the battles against the Japanese invaders. While they're doing this, Admiral Easton Shin is trying to rebuild the Joseon Navy. So also that month in September 1597, a small fleet of warships under the command of Admiral Yi finally encountered the large Japanese fleet of 133 warships, and that was supported by 200 other logistics ships in the Strait of Myeongnang. And what he did was he made use of this is a very narrow channel with really high tides and strong, fast-flowing currents. So he used that as an advantage to defeat them, even though they far outnumbered him. He destroyed 31 warships and killed the Japanese fleet commander in action. Still, the Joseon Navy was still too weak to control the sea lanes. The Japanese army achieved a victory at the Battle of Jikshan, Shonan, like I said, in September 1597. The Japanese land forces suddenly retreated to Gyeongsang province. In all probability, because of that defeat in Myeongnan. So what he did was another tactical success, is Yi just scared the shit out of them. He didn't defeat them, but he did scare them enough to make them fall back. In late November 1597, the Japanese army trolled Ulsan as a strategic stronghold, also on the southeast coast, north of Busan. Mm. The siege of Fort Ulsan lasted for more than 2 months, and Ming Joseon almost succeeded in taking it over. But in January 1598, Japan's reinforcements arrived and to help defend the besieged fort, and Ming Joseon had to retreat. Nearly 700 Ming soldiers were killed, and about 3,000 others were wounded during the siege. And according to the history of Ming, the Ming army suffered actually 20,000 casualties. So those numbers are all up in the air. So for the next several months, there was a stalemate. Japanese forces consolidated positions in the southern regions, while Ming Joseon combined forces and set up their strongholds in Gyeongju, Daegu, Hapcheon, Namwon, and Naju. These are all around southeast, but how to say that? The north-southeast.
Yeah, a little bit inland as well.
Yeah,
not on the coast.
Right, yeah. Only like the Gyeongju would be the closest to the coast. That
Right. Yeah.
They were enclosing. They were basically surrounding the Japanese, keeping them contained within Gyeongsang and Jeolla provinces. And then the fall of 1598. The Ming Joseon combined forces launched a full-scale attack against the Japanese army to break this deadlock. So this sounds similar to the deadlock during the Korean War, if you think about it.
Hmm.
It was a line of demarcation. But in a different area. But yeah, it was a big stalemate. So in fall 1598, this full-scale attacks. 70,000 Japanese troops were already there, and 60,000 were staying in Joseon to protect the southern coastal areas. A large coalition army of more than 113,000 soldiers, majority of them were Ming. I would say, I'm looking at the numbers now, I'd say 70% were Ming soldiers. And also 19,400 Ming and 7,328 Joseon seamen. I just had to say that. Carried out an all-out attack against the Japanese army. They were flinging the seamen against the Japanese army. All right, We lost all our listeners.
Stop that.
All right. The heavily outnumbered Japanese forces, they heavily outnumbered them, so they thoroughly defeated the Japanese. Barely any survivors. So in October 1598, the things really changed. The big thing was Toyotomi Hideyoshi died in September.
We'll return to the podcast after this message.
In our first comic, we explored ghastly Korean folktales while walking the streets of Seoul. This time, we are ambling the Korean highlands with terror tales set in those storied landscapes. Welcome to the dark side of Seoul, weird tales from Korean lore, Mountains of the Macabre.
Huge. That was a big event in the war. I'm
to me, for everyone that's listening, this is to me where everything that happens in the war to its conclusion is where things get really interesting, especially in Japan. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about Korea, of course, Joseon. But to me, this is Hideyoshi's death was a massive shift in the war.
Yeah. And you can almost kind of say it made Japan feel like there's unfinished business in Korea, because it feels like maybe it was prematurely ended.
And I'll just interject quick, because Hideyoshi knew he was sick. And he famously is quoted to have said, I'm not sure if there's any actual historic record of this, but he's famously quoted as said, don't let our soldiers become spirits in a foreign land.
Ooh, that's a great line.
And that's the name of the first story in the second Darkseid comic.
Oh, yeah, you're right. That is totally that.
That's why I chose that title.
Oh, wow.
So the spirit in the foreign land is not the spirit, the Korean spirit. It's the Japanese in that story. So there you go. That's where that title of that story comes from. That quote from Hideyoshi. So he may, yeah, I think the way it's looked at is that he was worried that there was so much death that he was worried about the idea of these, I don't know if he literally thought it, but the idea of the Japanese soldiers dying overseas played on his mind in some regard.
Yeah. Well, then after his death, Japanese army was ordered to make immediate and complete withdrawal from Joseon.
Right. The elders, the Council of Elders in Japan.
But they still had to go through Isun Shin to get back to Japan. And he was holding a grudge. Isun Shin caught up with the Japanese fleet sailing from Busan toward the Tsushima Strait, mounted a deadly attack on the Japanese fleet in the Strait of Noryang. Even though they were far outnumbered by the Japanese, Isun Shin destroyed 200 warships, 100 were captured, 500 Japanese soldiers were killed, 180 other soldiers were caught alive. The number of drowned, unknown, but the big event is Isun Shin himself was killed in action on November 19th. And that's where he became a legend.
Yes.
Yeah. And so the 7-year war with Japan finally came to an end. That's all I have to say about that. So next time we'll talk about the aftermath of this.
A good thing to say, my final thing to say about Isun Shin when he was killed. So he was shot. He was killed by a single bullet to the chest. And he didn't die right away.
No.
But when they were fighting, as you say, they were leaving the Council of Elders in Japan, the Council of Five Elders, more specifically in Japan, said, bring everyone home. September 1598. And then these final battles, when Isun Shin was shot, he told the people on his ship to not let everyone know that he was dead.
Right.
This is a famous point, because he was afraid that it could hurt the morale of the soldiers. So he said keep, he knew he was going to die. It was a mortal wound, and he told the people on his ship, keep it a secret, keep fighting, keep going until the last ship of the enemy is sunk, and then announce my death. And then he died. And so that's also partially partially part of his
legend,
his myth. Yeah, his legend is his the mythical status of him came. He was a leader until the end.
The big statue at Gwanghwamun Plaza that everyone knows.
Right.
Even in front of King Sejong.
Yeah, like
he and Sejong is new.
Sejong's a new one. Yeah.
What, 10 years ago that was put up? Maybe not even 10 years ago. 2009. Okay. So more than 10 years ago now. Oh, fuck. Yeah. It's been 15 years. It's been put up. The Isan Shin statue was put up in the early 70s.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been 50 something years or something. Yeah. 50 years or so. So that's a key thing. So his death was a massive, right at the end of the war as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right
that
at the end.
That makes me sad because this might be the most we'll ever talk about Isan Shin. I don't think we'll do an actual, I don't know. I don't see there's much use in doing a full episode on him because we kind of touched on the major parts of him.
Yeah. I mean, because there's nothing much else to say, really. He was a war hero. So he wrote poetry. He was an aristocrat, right?
He was just on the wrong side of politics.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's right. So he very likely hated the government. I'm sure he did.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if he hated the Yangban because he probably would have seen them as a bunch of wimpy pipsqueaks who are afraid to get their hands dirty.
They were.
Yeah. They were. And as a, soldier.
Yeah.
Right. He probably had a lot of secrets, probably discussed over a few bowls of makgeolli with his buddies about how shitty the Yangban were. I'm certain of it. Yeah,
if I was going to do another episode about him, it would be something like that. Just a little more details about secrets or something like that.
I'm not sure.
Like I know about him.
Right. And I think these types of feelings definitely existed at that era. The Yangban weren't respected.
Yeah.
We know they weren't. They're respected now in retrospect because I think it's just the way people kind of look back at the past.
Yeah, and they make for great Korean dramas.
Yeah, and but they were just a class of complete pieces of shit. And I'm certain people like Isan Shin, who were from the class technically, just did not respect them at all. And so, I think the key thing, though, anyway, about Isan Shin's death is that, yeah, he was a leader. An absolute leader right until the very end.
Yeah. And I put him in here just to highlight how incompetent the aristocrats in the government were.
Mm, and just, right.
And it's a pattern.
Right.
It's a pattern.
Yeah. Yeah. So there we have it.
There we go. So maybe, I will recommend again Samuel Hawley's YouTube series on the Imjin War.
It's great. It's very good. Very well produced. Yeah. Yeah. And his book as well, which the series is based off of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there we are.
Yeah. I'll remind you, we do have that comic we were just talking about. You can get that over at Dyson Comics Cafe at Jeonghyangpyeong Station in Seoul, or you can order it online at darksideofseoul.com in our store. The Dark Side of Seoul podcast is produced by Joe McPherson and Sean Morrissey. Hey, our opening and closing music. You got to do that every time now. You love that line from the play. That's pretty funny. Music and that was improvised during rehearsals. That was really funny. They told us to keep it. Our opening and closing music is by Sodak-san, which you can find on Bandcamp under Jeju Digital. We'd like to thank our top tier patrons: Angel Earl, Joel Bonamini, Sharon Cullen, Devin Hifner, Gabby Palomino, Steve Marsh, Mitchie Brewer, Eva Sakura, Ron Chang, Mackenzie Moore, Hunter Winter, Cecilia Lufgren Dumas, Emily Umbau, Josephine Reedberg, David Weatherly, Jenna Song, Devin Buchanan, and Ashley Wright. Thank you for really keeping us going. And we have exciting chats in our chat room. Thank you guys for helping me through my situation last week. I was having a little bit of a public meltdown in the middle of the night. And I'm fine. I'm fine now. I'm fine. But you got to see a side of me I don't want people to see. Thank you for talking me off the ledge.
And there's a lot of stuff in the chat room. Like today, David Weatherly's birthday is today. Happy birthday, David.
We're recording it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so everyone wished him a happy birthday. And then I found some cool stuff in a cemetery yesterday, and I shared that first to our patrons. They get a lot of that information first before I share it publicly. And I share it to the Tokibi the top tier.
Top tier patrons, yeah. Yeah, but you can still join patreon.com/darksideofsoul. And even just starting at $5, you get some extra content, like us talking before. You get the full episodes, even with our banter at the beginning, usually me talking about my really depressing love life. But but funny stories about mine. And other stuff. We talk about just really funny stuff before the show. That I think a lot of the patrons are patrons just so they can hear that part.
So there we have it.
All right, guys. Until next time, stay spooky.
Good night.